One, hold the paper up. One, two, three.
You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Not steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, nor are we in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. No, instead, ladies and gentlemen, we are in fact in the Bellagio Hotel Grand Ballroom Conference Center, attending the Mass Torts Conference 2015 in the wake of the first Democratic presidential debate for the 2016 presidential elections. As you know, sort of surprising, I wasn't planning on doing a show today. Generally, that was abrupt. Generally, I am usually taking this day as a travel day, but I got here early. And because of the debate, I was credentialed, ladies and gentlemen, which meant that every time I needed to go to the bathroom, I mean, this is really, essentially, this is what the difference was. This is what the difference between being credentialed for the debate as media or just watching it at home. When you watch it at home, you're watching it on a TV. You go to the bathroom, you just walk to your bathroom, you go to the bathroom, you come back. You could probably do that during the commercial break. The only difference between watching the debate at home and watching it as a credentialed member of the press, the fundamental difference is that when you have to go to the bathroom, as you're sitting there watching it on TV, you have to go through security, and then you have to come back through security on the way back. And then there's also a lot more people in the bathroom as opposed to your own private place. Beyond that, there was also a little bit of like, you know, I went to the spin room and there is a lot of sort of media types sitting with other like-minded media types, chuckling and chorting and enhancing. You definitely get a sense of why there's a groupthink when you watch these things, because I saw, you know, four or five CNN analysts just sitting there watching it and having sort of a similar reaction or each other's reactions to certain moments in the debate, enhancing theirs. And we're obviously going to get to the specifics of the debate in a minute. I'm going to be talking to not only Cliff Schechter, but also Adam Green simultaneously, ladies and gentlemen, assuming everything works. I would imagine it won't, but hope springs eternal. As you know, I am in Las Vegas. And ladies and gentlemen, I am shaven. That's right. I have shaved in anticipation. Maybe today I may have to do MSNBC. I would do it from Vegas. I am shaven, and I've talked about Harry's in the past. I have a twist on this. Oh, that's my cell phone, and maybe our guest's cell phone interfering. Yes, walk away. Walk away. Walk away with that cell phone. Oy. Okay, yeah, that's better. So, as you know, I've talked about Harry's in the past. I'm shaven today. However, what I forgot to do was to bring my Harry's shaving cream. Because it was too big of a thing, and I figured I'm going to get stopped. But I forgot to get, like, a small thing of shaving cream. So I had to shave with soap, which is not fun. However, I got to say, these Harry blades, they're good. Y'all know that shaving can be a pain. It can be uncomfortable. Razor bumps, I get that all the time. And it's outrageously expensive. For about half the price of other big branded blades and shipped directly to your door, Harry's.com. Why would you pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades? Adam Green, who's sitting across from me, but his mic is not turned on. It's half the price at Harry's. And at Harry's, not only do you get a better shave for your skin, your face, I don't know, your legs, Adam Green, if you do that, that's fine. But for the starter set, you pay $15. You get a razor, you get moisturizing shaving cream, 3 razor blades. It's a beautiful razor, too. It's like, I don't know if it's stainless steel, but it looks like chrome. And with the promo code MajorityReport, you get $5 off that deal if it's your first time at Harry's.com. $10 for a new razor, 3 blades, and shaving cream. Adam, I know you can't speak because your microphone's not on. All right, you really want to? Go ahead.
I'll just say that having heard about Harry's on the Majority Report, I became a customer.
Oh, you did?
And we are here at the Mass Torch Conference. Let me just say, there will be no Mass Torch around Harry's razors because these are so smooth.
Right. Okay. That's no great. You don't, in the middle of a pitch, you don't bring up tort actions. Go to Harry's.com now, and Harry's will give you $5 off if you type in my coupon code, MajorityReport, with your first purchase. That's Harry's.com. Enter coupon code MajorityReport. Check it out for $5. Start shaving better today. I gave grief to Adam last night that he was unshaven, and that's why he was not going to get any television hits. If you walk around like you're you're not ready for now he wants to.
Sam gave me this advice, and boom, this morning I did see the Washington Journal. Thank you, Sam Cedar, and thank you, Harry's Razors.
And look at he's got your face looks like that of like a baby.
I'm gonna tweet a picture of my face right now at Adam Green. You can check it out, folks.
Okay. So that's Harry's.com. Also, ladies and gentlemen, I'm in Vegas. And I will tell you, there has been, I think we mentioned on the show, actually, sort of there has been some controversy between the leading rotisserie football leagues. Well, apparently they're still advertising. A lot of folks come to Vegas. They bet on football. Well, you think you know football? You can prove it at FanDuel. FanDuel.com. It's the leader in one-week fantasy football. The money is real. They're expecting to pay out $2 billion this year. Building a team is easy. Just pick out your players, stay under the salary cap, sit back on Sunday, watch your team win. Entry fees start at just $1. Anyone can play. Finally, it can pay to be a fan. Last week, Wayne from Idaho, I don't know him personally, won $10,000 off a $2 entry fee. That could be you. Join him and over 1 million other users who've already won money on FanDuel. Come play with us. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use my code MAJOR, as in majority, sign up now. Special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200. That gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offer only good for the first 50 people that use my code MAJOR today. Don't forget to use my code MAJOR. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. All right, folks. All right, so my voice is going to get progressively worse as we go as the week goes on, because there are long days here. I get up early to do the show. I will give an update on my craps experience at the probably tomorrow. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Cliff Schechter and Adam Green will join me to talk about the Democratic debate. Michael just sent me a text, an IM. It literally reads, I believe, sounding all puberty? What does that mean? What does that mean, Michael? Sounding all puberty? Yes. I just said, what does that mean? He wrote back, your voice is cracking. Oh, I see what you're saying. So there's nothing wrong with the sound. There's just a problem with my voice. That's right. I am growing up, ladies and gentlemen. So when we come back, I'll be far more mature than I have been up to this point, and we will talk this Democratic debate, which I think, frankly, I don't know if the biggest story may come out. Well, let's save it for when Cliff is here. We'll be right back after this. Let me repeat that.
You driving all night. You could be a shadow beneath the streetlight behind my home. Driving on nine, I sure miss you. Past the motel, looking at the pines. Driving on nine, looking for 1:30. Maybe I passed it. Go.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Majority Report, and with me here in, well, I don't want to say studio, but with me here in conference, I guess, is Adam Green. He is the, of course, you know him as the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, I should say. Adam, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Yes, why?
Michael, can you roll my theme song, please?
We don't have your theme song. Uh-oh. Cell phone.
This is the worst theme song ever, I just got to say.
There we go. Oh, there it goes. Okay.
Thank you.
Cell phone has gone away.
Thank you.
And here is the theme song we have for today. That guy won't be able to hear it.
Jack Dye, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter.
Well, my first reaction is that clearly, after watching this debate, it really helped me to sort of settle on two candidates, Jim Webb or Lincoln Chafee. I mean, with their masterful, I can't even go through the motions. Obviously, those two guys were a bit embarrassing, and we can get into more detail. I thought the other three all had very strong performances. I see a lot of the mainstream media has kind of gotten on the Hillary Clinton bandwagon and said that she had a very strong evening. I think that's true, but I also thought there were some especially really strong points that Martin O'Malley had, for example, on Glass-Steagall was one of them, and immigration reform. I thought Bernie Sanders had some equally strong moments also, especially maybe the biggest moment of the night with the saying that, you know, that he thought that we were hearing too much about her damn emails, I think, to quote him also, which was magnanimous and also kind of within Bernie's, his whole sort of campaign of sticking to the issues and not being, not paying attention to all this silliness that the media pushes out there. So I really feel like, you know, I don't know that it changed anything at all, but I felt that all three of them had really strong performances. So that was my feeling.
Adam, give me your take.
So the big news coming out of last night is that the center of gravity in the Democratic Party has vastly shifted towards the Elizabeth Warren wing in an economic populist direction. If you think back just 4 years ago, and certainly 8 years ago, it is unthinkable that we would have a presidential debate where the topics of debt-free college, expand Social Security, break up Wall Street banks, Glass-Steagall, and jail Wall Street bankers would come up, let alone 100% clean energy. That shows that progressives and an economic populist tide has really shifted the ground on which these candidates are standing, and they're now competing with each other to sound bolder on those issues. There were some differences we could talk about, but that was the big headline for me coming out last night.
I agree with largely with what both of you have said. However, and frankly, let me just preface this by saying this is one of those situations where I feel like I am too close to get a sense of how this is going to resonate with people. I think it's quite clear that Hillary Clinton did a very good job in coming off as an extremely competent candidate, which, I mean, is a fairly obvious thing. But, you know, the way that we've been hearing things talking about her over the past 6 months has been she's not a human being. She is not, she's going to fall apart as a candidate. That clearly did not happen. What I saw Hillary Clinton do, and let's get into some of the specifics. And, I really don't even want to talk about Chafee and Webb, really, because, just not interested. And I would be surprised if they're going to be around for very long. And we can talk about Martin O'Malley, who basically just did a lot of Me Tooing. Good Me Tooing.
Helpful Me Tooing.
Very helpful Me Tooing, because he in some way sort of is, he's the third person there, and he can sort of decide what end of the spectrum the center of gravity is within the context of that debate stage. But Hillary Clinton, it seemed to me, last night, basically ripped a page out of Barack Obama's 2008 campaign. She is running as a populist unless you start to hear the end of her sentence. Like she is saying, she is addressing, let's just use, for instance, the debt-free college, which I know Adam has worked on this extensively. Bernie Sanders says tuition-free college. And she says, I agree with Bernie Sanders. And I think at one point she even said, I don't think that people should pay for tuition, but she also thinks that they should work. And I got news for you. Labor is value, is money. And her whole thing about, she doesn't want Donald to pay for Donald Trump's kids. A, Donald Trump kids are not going to public university. And if they are, that's probably better for all of us, frankly. That they're not going to some elite institution to go with other rich people to keep it all amongst themselves, these networks and these connections. But B, so what? So what? The idea that other people should have to work and Donald Trump's kids, they don't have to work to go to college. you know, they get the choice anyways, or their family has the choice. And so I saw her trying to match Bernie Sanders' rhetoric. But if you dig into her policies, not the same thing.
So this is Adam. It's not the same thing, but we're in a pretty amazing place. So basically, just to be clear, she talks about debt-free tuition. He talks about free tuition. Debt-free is a result. Debt-free means you'll graduate with zero debt, and there's multiple things that can facilitate that. One is work-study. Another is parental contributions. Another is aid from the state or the federal government. And I totally agree. You know, 20 hours a week out of someone's school life actually puts them at an academic disadvantage. Now, it was encouraging that her plan actually calls for 10 hours a week and capping it at that. That's a good thing. But the fact that the scope of debate is between debt-free tuition and free tuition, right? Debt-free college and free college on the Democratic side,
right?
Compared to where we were 8 months ago, that's a great place for progressives to be having the debate.
Yes.
Go
ahead, Cliff. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, I want to agree with Adam and also jump in and say, you know, with what Adam said at the beginning, which is how much more of a progressive, you know, a populist progressive party this is, I would say economically, absolutely, but really even overall, I like the direction that the party is going. I mean, if you think about, obviously, I've worked on some of the issues, and we can talk about like Social Security closely and look at where we are on that and the discussion that was being had, not about cutting it, but who we increase it for, if not everyone, which is obviously, I think, all of our positions here. But on some of the key social issues I've worked on the one issue where Bernie's a little more conservative or moderate on guns, I think Hillary and O'Malley have moved him further to the left. And I think Hillary, you know, one of the things she did that was also, you know, it's really just the Republican strategy attacking Planned Parenthood backfiring. Or, you know, when I think about debates, you know, from 4, 8, 12 years ago, when we weren't, the Democrats are often scared to come out strongly on some social issues, immigration, on, you know, reform on guns, you know, on reform of gun laws, on standing up strongly for women's rights, women's reproductive justice. You know, it's an area now that I think the Hillary Clinton people have seen that they can kind of grab and run with, obviously her being a woman. And a lot of that is because a lot of the backlash that I see, especially, you know, they try to claim that this is just a coastal issue. Well, out here in Ohio, I see a ton of it on how far these guys have pushed women to be unbelievably angry. And then so some of the issues that cross, you know, those two thresholds, it becomes sort of economic and social issues, like, let's say, you know, paid family leave. You get a full-throated and strong support from all the candidates on the stage for something like that, which we never would have heard 4 or 8 or 12 years ago. So I really feel like on all these issues that, you know, as Adam said, we're in a terrific place where, you know, each of the candidates, you know, are being pushed to a place where, you know, where hopefully, I mean, obviously on Glass-Steagall, I would need Hillary to go somewhat further because reinstatement, I think, is important. I'm not saying everybody's perfect on everything. I'm just saying we're in a much better place, and we're choosing between much better options where people stand than we were in the past, and that's an incredibly good thing.
I agree 85%. Okay, like, I mean, we're in Vegas, guys. I understand. We're sitting at the table, but as Kenny Rogers said, you don't count your money while you're sitting at the table, right? Isn't that what he said? Was it Kenny Rogers? I don't know.
He did say that.
It was Kenny Rogers who said that. I'm sure.
You get yourself in trouble if you start counting it while you're actually sitting at the table.
Well, no, but I do think that it's true that we should take this moment to celebrate. And frankly, you know, both you guys, and I know Adam, like, this has been your, we have talked about this in the past many times. This has been your raison d'être, if you will. That's French.
That was good.
To leverage what the energy that Elizabeth Warren was bringing to the Democratic Party, to leverage that and force the debate, basically move the Overton window, as you would. And frankly, I mean, we really have moved it. And the thing is, it's not just been stretched on the left, it seems to me. It's actually crept a little bit away from the center on that stage, right? Because when, I mean, nobody was on that stage, basically, who, you know, I don't think I'd vote for Jim Webb because of some of his sort of, I think, somewhat overly sensitive white disenfranchisement issues. But if I felt that those two candidates, Chafee and Webb, I didn't have, like, sort of just broader questions about them. But on an issue standpoint, for the most part, this is the whole field is playing on, you know, a territory that we haven't seen before. Now, with that said, I just think that Hillary Clinton is getting up there and she is doing a good job of making it seem like she's right in the mix there, but with a lot of outs. And all I'm saying is be very careful, because it's one thing for her to sort of sound like it, but I feel like we went down this road a little bit with Obama. And in that respect, and again, I don't know if there were more people who didn't respond, who have been introduced to Bernie Sanders and responding to him. But in that respect, Bernie Sanders has to do a better job of being more succinct in pointing out where those differences with Hillary Clinton are.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's some political arguments here and some policy arguments here. Politically, the benefit of her jumping in those waters and making it seem like it's the same is our job as progressives gets infinitely easier next year as we're trying to convince an entire slate of Democrats, U.S. Senate candidates, House candidates, to adopt these big, bold positions, if it sounds like all the candidates are basically in the same ballpark, right? So that's good. But we need to point out the differences. I think Cliff was on the verge of referencing one of the most important ones a few minutes ago on Social Security. So Hillary Clinton has talked about, quote, enhancing Social Security, right? In a world where Paul Ryan talks about saving Social Security, meaning cut it, what does enhance mean? Paul Ryan probably would say he wants to enhance Social Security too, right? She has not yet uttered the words expand Social Security. Last night, for the first time I've heard, she clarified a bit what enhance means and said that that would mean an expansion of benefits, without using the word expand, for low-income people.
Right.
Now, that's good.
Right.
And I think what Cliff was going to say before is if the spectrum of debate ends up being do we expand Social Security for some or do we expand it for all, and the word cuts is not part of the final debate, we have, you know, won a major victory.
We've come a long way.
Right. But it's important to note that, like, she and Bernie Sanders do not have the same position there yet and most likely will not. Debt-free college, same thing. Like, his plan is definitely more generous, but both would achieve debt-free college for millions of people. His would achieve it most likely for all people. So we can't give her a pass on some of these caveats. One last one, TPP. Her current position is, based on the information I've heard basically this week,
right,
I am currently opposed to it. Well, that means if she learns one new fact, she basically has license.
We need to know what she's known.
Lots of annoying caveats there. We have to call them out, but also we should celebrate the ballpark that we're playing in at this point.
That's right. And I think, you know, and go ahead, Cliff.
No, I'm sorry. I'll make this quick. I agree with that. I think in the end, what we learned from President Obama in the end and what happened there is clearly the further we can push people in a progressive direction, even if in the end they go back somewhat on it, they don't go back fully on what they promised to do. I mean, you know, obviously losing the public option, something that Adam and I and I think a whole lot of people fought for to the very end, and you too, Sam, I should say, that didn't happen in the end. But we still got a very good overall, better than my expectations, truthfully, without the public option healthcare bill that is covering a lot more people, and it turns out is lowering the cost of healthcare in some pretty important ways. So, President Obama, obviously, when he was candidate, Obama was not nearly as far left as and nobody on that stage was as everybody was last night. So the point is that. That's point A, which is, you know, the further you push them to the left, even if they compromise, they're further to the left than they would be. And point B is exactly what Adam says, which is you got to parse out and leave as little room as possible for words that don't mean anything. So in the end, we have to make sure that when people say they're going to enhance things or improve things or reform things, to get them to say specifically in numbers, you know, what that actually means. And you know, we have every 4 years as the cycles have gone on with the kind of media we have and being able to actually talk more directly to people and more directly impact people, you know, or impact those who are running, I think that we're able to get more from it, and we need to all keep up and stay strong on that. That's what I would say.
I got 2 points to make. One is, and I think you alluded to this, Adam, but it bears repeating, even if it's just rhetoric. And even if that rhetoric is imprecise so that there is a lot of wiggle room, it gives tools to people like you, Adam, for instance, to go out and impact the debate that's happening in Congress right now. So the TPP, for instance, is going to be voted upon probably sometime in February, right? I mean, in terms of the timeline, they have 60 days after the first 30. I mean, that brings us somewhere around to February. And the idea that every single presidential candidate in the Democratic race is against the TPP, because, you know, it would be very difficult for her to get that new piece of information 90 days from now. Like, that hedge for me is all about when I become president. If it comes back, I'm going to give myself some wiggle room. But in the short term, when this vote comes up, Adam's going to be able to go out there with the PCCC, and other groups are going to be able to go out there and say to different representatives, to senators, hey, why are you not with where your next president is? Like, why are you voting for something that your next president is saying you shouldn't vote for?
Or as reporters will ask, oh, so do you disagree with Hillary Clinton, who you've endorsed? Is she wrong on this?
Right. And that puts them in a very difficult bind. And so, and she must know this. I mean, this is, and so the price that has been extracted from her, because I don't think this was her natural state to oppose TPP. And frankly, I don't care what her natural state is. I would love her to go through 8 years of a presidency completely only doing what Adam Green tells her, because she has to. And even though deep in her heart, she really wants to do what I say or somebody else says.
I would have settled for a theme song, but okay, I'll take it.
Okay, so that's point one. But let's get to this difference between Bernie and Hillary's vision for these programs, like Social Security. Like, I don't know if you can see, I don't know the paid family leave enough, but you can see it in the college, and I imagine it goes across the board. Healthcare, too, I would imagine. And that is, and here's where I take a little bit of umbrage with your use of the word generous. And I know that gets thrown around in terms of, but there's a connotation to that there's like, that it's just, there's a certain amount of largesse. And I just don't like the term.
I would agree.
But when Bernie and, because when Bernie and Hillary are articulating their visions for these social welfare programs, let's call them. I know people don't like the word welfare, but we all get welfare, whether it's because of your mortgage deduction or your capital gains tax is lower. You're all getting welfare. And they have two different visions of that. They all believe that there should be a certain amount of welfare for rich people, because nobody's saying, let's pull back the home deduction tax. And Hillary's saying we should have welfare for the neediest amongst us. But what she is not saying is to actually give welfare to the middle class. And she would means test it, if you will. I mean, not specifically, but yes, I guess specifically, right? When she says we'll expand Social Security for the poorest amongst the poor. Well, I mean, the fact is that Bernie Sanders is expressing a vision of the welfare state which actually makes everybody's lives better and transforms society in some way to allow everyone, so that they don't, there are certain things he's taking off the table that are almost given as like basic human rights, like what you aspire to if you are a civilized society.
And whether you want to call it a human right or just a public good, right? One would not argue, let's not build roads because rich people will also use the roads.
Right. Right?
Let's not
right.
build schools and libraries because rich people also use them. The way he gets around that is he said, let's build them. It makes sense if we have, you know, state charging tuition to have, you know, just a tuition rate. But now let's charge rich people more on the front end. They pay more into it. Right. So he will, you know, If they functionally get $10,000 and pay an extra $100,000 as the net effect of his proposal, they are paying a lot more into the public good. And it's almost a red herring to say we're subsidizing them.
Right. It's means testing, but just doing it on the front end.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's how you expand Social Security. You get wealthier people
to pay a ton
to
more
pay more at the front end. Yeah. But they can always be sure that it's going to be there for them if they really need it, because they paid so much in taxes that it'll be more important to them as they get older, which, of course, is not going to happen.
Can we hit a couple other areas of the
debate? Yes, please.
So, one, let's just talk about Anderson Cooper for a second. Thought he did an okay job.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was thinking about the worst case scenario, I was saying to myself, okay, the worst case scenario is that the first hour is spent on Syria, email servers, and guns. And that's where we landed.
Yeah.
Right? He really buried economic populism. And a lot of these differences weren't able to fully be explored because he was trying to get them to attack each other and really kind of playing to some of his colleagues and harping on News of the Day in a way that was really counterproductive.
Right. And then everything felt rushed.
Everything felt really rushed. And, you know, there actually is something called the Open Debate Coalition. It's a big progressive, conservative, Silicon Valley set of people who are trying to create a new norm where everyday people can submit questions and vote on questions, and the moderators have to choose from among the top 25 or so questions. And that it would have been a much different debate yesterday if he had to choose from among what people were actually asking about. So that was number one. I just thought that really skewed the ability for some of these things to have enough oxygen to be fully explored.
We didn't hear anything about Jesus. Like, we don't know who talks to God in that group right now, and it's really
right. And who's supposed to be on the $10 bill? We don't know that either.
That question, actually, I don't have a problem with. But go ahead.
I mean, would Jim Webb's Secret Service code name be crazy? I don't know. We don't know that fact. The second thing,
I would have wanted to hear Jim Webb's answer to that question. It would have been awesome. It would be like, it was a female Viet Cong who rushed me. And I won't go with the rest of it, but you understand.
Right. There were two historic firsts last night. One is it's the first presidential debate with debt-free college, expense, Social Security, jail the bankers in it. The second was the first time a presidential candidate has bragged about killing somebody on a debate stage.
That
was interesting. The other thing was, you know, generally there's been a rule of twos, I call it, where O'Malley and Sanders create critical mass and kind of force Clinton into a certain area. Unfortunately, we had a reversal of that on the Edward Snowden surveillance question, where Bernie Sanders said, basically, let him go. He's revolutionized our debate. But O'Malley and Clinton were really hard on him. And it's actually depressing. You know, the one end game out there is like, oh, maybe when Obama is gone, we'll have a new regime that will be supportive of whistleblowers and undo some of these injustices.
I literally, and it was not a happy laugh, I laughed out loud when she said he could have just gone the whistleblower route and gotten protections. You cannot articulate those words in particular. I mean, it's one thing to sort of say, like, I think Edward Snowden's a lawbreaker. He went to Russia, and that's all I... But to actually dig deep enough into it where you say there are whistleblower protections, he could have gone that route, is either A, just incredibly ignorant. Because, I mean, listeners to this program, we've talked to Thomas Drake, we've talked to Jocelyn Raddick, we've talked about the story, I think, of William Binney and others. Whistleblowers over the past 10 to 15 years have been summarily destroyed and prosecuted, A. And B, if you're not completely ignorant of that, then you are really, really lying. And that I found a really disturbing moment. It's one thing for O'Malley, who I think was just like, okay, this is the box I have to check off. He's a lawbreaker. He should go to jail. But to actually bring up the issue and delve into it, it's even worse, I think, in my mind.
Also, one thing before, I mean, I'd like to get back to the issues too, but another thing, when Adam was talking about Anderson Cooper and just sort of the sort of format of the debate and what kind of questions were asked, you know, another interesting thing, and I saw people throwing this out on Twitter before or whatever, and never really was answered, is, you know, why you get the sort of Hugh Hewitt suck up in the CNN debate for the Republicans, but there is nobody who you could call sort of a left leaning commentator who was on on this one. Why was it that Hugh Hewitt was there to say, like, I know all your positions are awesome and you look really sexy and you're fantastic, but, which is essentially what Hugh Hewitt's questions were, if you right. remember that debate. I mean, it's hard to remember because it was 3 hours and we mostly want to kill ourselves or whatever. But point being that, yeah, I mean, what they should really have to explain that, because that's a serious difference in format and a way for somebody on the conservative side to kind of affect the debate in a way that obviously influences people's perceptions.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so we cannot leave this discussion without talking about an important gun moment in the debate, and I really want to hear Cliff's thoughts on this. We're at the Master Storage Conference once again, which has nothing to do with Harry's razors, but it does have to do with the general idea that if big corporations hurt the little guy, that the little guy should be able to hold them accountable. I'm really curious what Cliff's thoughts were on that moment with Sanders and basically the vote to give immunity or a very low cap on what gun manufacturers would have to pay if they were negligent in giving out, you know, in distributing guns. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Bernie's getting better on that question, and I do think this is something that, you know, it was a bad vote by him. I mean, I don't, there's no other way I can say it but that. And I understand he comes from a rural state. I mean, Sam and I have had some of these discussions. I understand it's not the same as New York. At the same time, we're not talking about sort of, you know, Yankee hunting culture here with that vote. We're talking about protecting major industries. You know, in the case of the DC sniper, you know, the company that was found liable for, you know, millions of dollars because 238 assault rifles, including the Bushmaster that was used by the DC sniper, just sort of, you know, were misappropriated. And oops, where are they? And he got a hold of them. Well, these guys need to be, you know, there's many cases where it's not about whether you make your firearm correctly. It's, are you marketing it to kids? Are you marketing it to criminals? You know, are guns just disappearing and oops, they're ending up? Are you allowing straw purchases to happen? You know, which is essentially, you know, gun trafficking. And so he's getting better. He's got such strong answers in splitting up sort of big corporations versus people and economic issues. I'd still like to see him come a little bit further and say, yes, it wasn't an easy thing. It's a complicated issue, but we have to always be, you know, be taking the side of the little guy when they are getting screwed by a large corporation. I mean, obviously I wouldn't expect him to use that word, but when they are preying on people, and that's what a lot of these gun manufacturers are doing in various ways. So, but it was really great to hear him say that, you know, that he would rethink that vote and that, because I could see that coming up again.
Now, I did not hear that. I did hear him say that he has a problem with straw man purchases, and he did say when he directly addressed it, I have a real problem with corporations who sell their guns to the wrong people. But that's really a different question. The question of liability is so important because their product, if it is used in the way that it's intended, there's two different elements of the liability as far as I can see it. When it's used in the way that it's intended, it can kill people. There's also another part, though, because you could statutorily sort of like head that off if that's too sensitive. The other part is they have the ability to make their guns significantly safer. So every time
exactly.
we see Cagro X on his Twitter feed mention somebody accidentally Second Amendment themselves in the head, or some four-year-old accidentally Second Amendment her five-year-old brother, that is something that could be specifically addressed by gun manufacturers. They could manufacture their guns so that the guns that are out there could not actually be used in that way. You can make guns so that
smart gun technology is where I think you're going.
You can make guns so that three-year-olds do not have the ability. In the same way that we can make medicine safe from kids. I mean, can you imagine if we did not have the ability to say to Tylenol, hey, we're going to sue you because you make your medicine with these sort of flip-top caps, or you make them look like in a Tic Tac box, and it's that easy for kids to get at it. And a couple of kids every week die because they overdose on this stuff. I mean...
Yep.
There would be we would see a booth here at this conference about those cases, about those millions of cases. And That is what Bernie Sanders specifically dodged last night. Like, he specifically dodged that. And, you know, if he's lucky, nobody notices. I noticed, and I think that's a problem.
It's also a missed opportunity to connect the gun debate to an economic populist argument, right?
You know, we've seen this in
a couple places. You know, with Black Lives Matter, there are some things that are strictly racial justice issues. There happens to be a merger of economic populism and Black Lives Matter around for-profit prisons, right, where these two vibrant streams of energy can flow together and go to battle together. With guns, one thing I noticed was just rhetorically, the candidates keep hitting the NRA. And the NRA is really just kind of a heat absorber for the gun manufacturers. They're a shield, right?
Right.
Right. The gun manufacturers pay the NRA to exist and absorb that heat. And until we move the Overton window over to the big corporations, we're not going to ever actually win. There's no incentive for anybody to give up on the other side, right?
Right. I mean, Cliff, what about that? I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but what about that? Are there efforts to sort of say, like, hey, we're no longer going to, Wayne LaPierre's shiny objects is no longer going to be the issue. We're going to deal directly with the manufacturers of guns. We're going to make sure that every American in the country knows the name of the manufacturer of each gun that's used that accidentally killed a four-year-old.
I've been saying that for a while. I think that needs to happen. Whenever that happens, and I don't think we are doing enough of it now. And I think there are people talking about it now. But you're right. They need to know who the manufacturer is. And frankly, they should know who the CEO is. Because everybody knows who Wayne LaPierre is at this point. I mean, and as you said, if there was somebody who was putting out Tylenol and it was accessible to kids and kids were dying every week, I promise you we'd be hearing about who that CEO is. So I agree. There needs to be more direct pressure put on these guys, certainly in the field, in the realm of public opinion. But that's why that vote from 2005 for immunity, if we get a Democratic president and we head towards a Democratic Congress, that vote needs to be undone. Because it has protected these guys in a way that the tobacco companies were not able to protect themselves. I mean, that's how we got at them, and so that's important. I will say on a slightly different level, though, it's interesting we're talking about this today because a huge decision came out today that the Brady campaign won against one of them. Because what most people don't know is when it comes to the actual dealers, now we're not talking about the gun manufacturers, but the dealers, there's a very small percentage of them who very often sell quite purposely, or they just close their eyes to it, to criminals and to others who shouldn't be able to buy. And one of them, a couple of police who were shot and hurt in Milwaukee, got a lawyer and the Brady campaign represented them, and they sued. And they just won a decision today for a couple million dollars against one of these dealers that's notorious in Milwaukee for selling guns. And so that's an important part of the conversation, too, is those dealers need to be made infamous, and they need to be held accountable, and they need to be shut down.
Yeah, it would be fascinating to see, like, to have a running tally of whatever it is. Winchester, they have 42 kills of five-year-olds this year. I mean, just, focus it that tightly. What gun is responsible for more kids' accidental deaths? And just work on that because, it's about, access of little people to little, regular people, to the courts to get some type of redress. You could have made this product safer knowing that, you've already had 30 kids killed this year by your gun. That's a sort of tip off like, hey, maybe we have a problem here.
So let me just say that there have been numerous streams of activism that we've done that actually emanated from the things that Sam has said on the show. And I would just encourage anybody out there who's actually interested in this question and willing to do some research to do the research. And if you could tweet it at us, Adam Green, Sam Cedar, Cliff, what's your Twitter, Cliff Schechter?
At Cliff Schechter, yeah.
Yeah, I would, there is something real here. This is a stream of activism that needs to happen. So,
that seems to me to be a sort of an obvious way, but that's tangential to the debate. All right, let's go through some just other quick thoughts. I was shocked that Bernie Sanders only got high twice. That blew me away, I gotta say.
And he only got what? I didn't hear you there.
That he smoked pot only twice. Did you hear that, Cliff?
No, I'm sorry. One more time.
It's getting a little bit louder, I think, in here. That Bernie Sanders smoked pot twice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, gotcha.
The best jokes are the ones told three times, really.
Yeah, exactly. If you have to it's not even a joke. It's sort of just a shocking observation, right?
I was surprised when Martin O'Malley was talking about his guns and pointed at his biceps. I was like, Martin, put it away.
No, he did not.
No, he did not do that. That was
What did you think about
Martin
O'Malley?
He did release those pre-debate photos with the guns peering out from under his...
We haven't talked much about Martin O'Malley because there was... My sense was there was a lot of Me Too, and I did it. I think he addressed, not to my satisfaction. Let me say there was two. I had two interpretations of Martin O'Malley. One is very slick. The other one is I don't think people will see him as slick. He really, it seems to me, was gunning for that VP spot.
So I want to give Martin O'Malley a bit more credit.
Okay.
He was the first person in this debate to talk about debt-free college and the only person to use the words debt-free college, which don't need to be used in that exact phraseology, but to me that was a good movement thing to do. He is very aware of the vibrant movement that's happening. And he acknowledged it in a way that empowers our work, and I appreciate that.
He spoke very well to Black Lives Matter as well.
He spoke well.
His language was very good.
And the last one,
I'd give him more credit than you also, Sam. I mean, I thought he came off as very strong. I mean, obviously on the gun issue, but a variety of, you know, on immigration, I thought what he said was really strong. I thought also on energy, and it was good as, you know, in terms of moving the center of gravity, as Adam said. I think, you know, and then Glass-Steagall, he really held Hillary's feet to the fire on that. So I thought his being there was good. It's obviously a tough situation because right now, you know, he's kind of the odd man out, right? He's the third wheel here, and each of them has sort of staked out strong areas, and he kind of, so that puts him into the somewhat of the Me Too-ism almost automatically. But I do think here and there when he could break through, he was very good. I mean, I thought, you know, I don't know what I expected going in, but I thought it was a strong performance overall.
And just to add to something Cliff mentioned, the energy thing. So he talked about 100% clean energy, which is not just a random concept. Again, there was a very vibrant movement, a very vibrant set of things being put into place around that goal. And him not just bringing it up once, but a couple times threaded throughout the debate, I imagine was very powerful and helpful for the people organizing around that. So, yeah, I just want to give him a little more credit.
All right. I will,
He was very generous. He was very generous in his progressive
language. I mean, I don't know what it is that gives me the...
You don't like the biceps.
I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just jealous. Yeah. Maybe I'm just jealous of his biceps.
I'm just jealous because I see this sexy picture of Adam Green on Twitter with you guys.
There you go.
Really, it's with you, Sam, and then, of course, the whole Ring of Fire crew.
I'm looking at that picture right now. I just retweeted it.
How did Farron bust his way into the Ring of Fire picture? I'm impressed.
Yeah, he's Farron's in there. He's doing it on the TV show. All right. Well, listen, I don't know how much more we have here. I mean, you know, people can see the sort of highlights on CNN where it's Chafee asked for two mulligans on his votes, but says that the Iraq vote, you know, like he said, TARP and the Patriot Act reauthorization. Glass-Steagall. Don't hold those against me. That type of thing.
I remember when you inherited this show from your father. In your first month, I think you talked about cutting Social Security. And honestly, I've forgiven you a long time ago.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, when you first get into the show, it's just you got to settle in. You can't work the board. You're like, I don't know if I.
Now working the board.
Oh my God! I mean, that was a pretty awesome answer. Just the whole thing of, I just got in there. I was just the mayor of, you know, Warwick before that. Sort of in a manner of speaking, admitting that you weren't qualified to be there. And I just got in there. I'd only been a mayor of a small town. I mean, what the hell was I doing there anyhow?
And I also like the fact that Bernie, you know, said that our major security threat is climate change. And The enemies thing was pretty fascinating. Like you said, Jim Webb said, the guy I killed. Hillary listed drug companies, NRA, Iranians, and Republicans. So, we weren't talking about the Iranians answer so much as because she lumped them with the Republicans. Good stuff there, in my mind. and I got to say, I don't know what the numbers were for watching the debate. Have you heard at all how many?
15.3 million, a new record by a lot.
Yeah, now that's pretty good. I got to say, that's more than I had anticipated. I thought it would be closer to 10 million because...
Yeah, I think it was 50% more than... Because I think the record had been 10 million, so it was a pretty big jump.
That's a big jump. And CNN, we should also say, had a lot more access online than, let's say, the original Fox debate. I can assure you, I know a lot of people who watch that Republican debate because in the same way that you watch a car crash, but one that is with Nerf cars because no one's really getting hurt. But then, oddly, you'd like people to get hurt. So it's a very conflicted experience watching that debate. But it's going to be interesting to see, really fascinating, if Bernie's ideas pushed through and seemed different enough when everybody was sort of, or that the ideas themselves get him more embraced. And then also, does this put pressure on the next Republican debate for them to not come out with like a bunch of monkeys throwing their poo on the wall? Because
not really, because that's who they are. That's who their base is. So sadly,
well,
they live in fantasy. I mean, I hope so, Sam, but I don't have much confidence in that.
Do those people who sat there on CNN? Does it begin to be inescapable for them to say, and the rest of the sort of the Beltway media? Does it become inescapable? Where more and more of them, I know David Brooks did this past week, but next week he'll change his mind, where they say, hey, you know what? This is not about Donald Trump. This is not about Ben Carson. This is about the Republican Party. There is a problem in the Republican Party. They are not a party that is that has solutions or even can identify the proper problems. They're involved in a completely different exercise than what we have normally associated with politics. We'll see.
So on that media critique point, let me just point out to anybody who has enjoyed this discussion, I've enjoyed this discussion.
Me too.
You are not getting this on CNN. You're not getting this on any cable show. I happen to be a Majority Report dues-paying member, and we will extend an offer that we once extended in the past, which is the first 10 people who listen to this podcast and or see it online and sign up to be a member and tweet at me, at Adam Green, letting me know, we will send you an I'm from the Elizabeth Warren wing of American politics bumper sticker.
Ooh.
Yes, first 10 people. But regardless of the sticker, seriously, this, it's important that conversations like this be able to get out there. I would also encourage you to send this to your friends. We need to proliferate a lot of these ideas. We may have just launched a new gun campaign aimed at gun manufacturers on the show.
I don't know why it hasn't been done already.
Seriously,
from the time that I said it 2 minutes ago.
Seriously.
Adam Green, yeah. Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Last night was in many ways, and you too, Cliff, through your advocacy, a victory. For you guys, it must be this huge, I don't know, I can only imagine, and I interviewed your co-founder, Stephanie Taylor, on Ring of Fire. I think it's playing this week, or it was last week, I can't even remember anymore. But, you could see it on that stage last night. I mean, people who have listened to this program have watched how... and we have talked about this in the past, Adam, watched how over the years your organization has been able to create the narrative and the meme, if you will, of, I mean, obviously Elizabeth Warren has a lot to do with that, but the idea of Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party, no candidate comes in, no newly elected senator comes in and says, hey, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, no, it is groups that push and create that space and develop those memes. And last night we saw that narrative, like we could watch it as a leverage, as a crowbar in some respects. And it really pushed everybody into a place where, you know, we could walk away from that debate and go like, the future, I don't know if they'll be able to implement these things in the short term, but the future for the Democratic Party is at least, it's on the right trajectory. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. It was very gratifying. And, you know, sometimes it can seem like a really long slog. Progress can be seen very glacial, but seen over the course of years, it's possible for activism to matter. And the Elizabeth Warren wing is much bigger than Elizabeth Warren. It's much bigger than our organization. It is an entire community of people pushing forward together, including public intellectuals. And, yeah, last night was great.
Cliffy, last words?
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with all this, and I'd say even more. You know, we have to hold people's feet to the fire. We have to continue, and people, as Adam said, who are listening, have to get involved. But it's an exciting time because activism does take a while. You know, things don't happen overnight. But I think we're seeing a crucial period of time where you know, this isn't, I mean, I would say when you see last night's debate, you can say very clearly this is not the DLC's party anymore. All right, this is not third way's party. You know, even on the issues where they were sort of, you know, leading the debate, so to speak, and they're being quoted as recently as a few years ago. I mean, here are these guys that have all this money and all this insider access, and you know, the party's gravity has moved to the left, has moved to where all the polls say most people are not just progressives, but most of this country. So there's a lot that can be done, but for those people that are out in the trenches just starting to fight on new issues, you know, take solace from that. And I would say, you know, it may take a while, but while you see some victories, you start fights on others, you know, and I think there's a lot of progress that can be made over the next decade, especially with what's going on with demographics. So we'll leave it on a positive note and all say, right, yay, everyone.
All right. Cliff, thank you so much. We'll talk to you later, buddy. See you
thank
next
you.
Week. Adam Green, always a pleasure to see you. Glad to have it in the flesh. And maybe we'll have you jump on, I don't know, over the next day or two. I'll be still here. As folks know, I'm at the Mass Torch Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're at the Bellagio Hotel. And tomorrow on the program, I'm not quite sure whom we're going to have. At one point, we're going to be talking about the potential litigation over the Volkswagen diesel engine fraud, outright fraud. We're going to be talking to somebody about C8. You'll recall that interview I did with the writer from The Intercept about DuPont. There has been some amazing happenings in that case. And our very own Mike Papantonio, I don't know if he's going to be with us. I know he's going to be busy here, but just was involved in a case that it seems to be rocking DuPont's world. I'm going to have a chance. Is Bobby Kennedy going to be around this week? Also, I hope to sit down maybe with Tom Hartman. I'll be talking to other attorneys about a couple of other cases. As you know, folks, some of my Social Security is one of my top fetishes. But I also, tort law, I am fascinated by, and it is so crucial. That is why I come to this debate. Also, to lose money at the craps table. Now, sadly, I have not lost money at the craps table. And you're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out more. I don't have my sound effect board, so I can't really totally push that. What now, Adam? You look like you're ready to. No, okay. So tomorrow on the program, my gambling update. We will talk to some lawyers about some tort actions that are going on here. We'll talk to some media figures, we will hopefully be able to take your IMs tomorrow, possibly your calls as well. So join us tomorrow. Short show today, but, I mean, so dense with quality analysis. And apparently, you know, development of future gun campaigns. Folks, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off of your coffee. Goes right to your door. Fair trade. It's great coffee. And if you use Amazon, if you already use Amazon, the least you can do is go through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. MajorityReportKickback.com. You use that horrible company's link, and we get a kickback. So you can be your own little Robin Hood and steal from Jeff Bezos and give it to the Majority Report. All right, folks, we will see you tomorrow at noon, really. At noon is when we'll see you. And I will hit this, and I will be even more technically proficient than at noon tomorrow Eastern as I hit this. Nope. As I, like I said, hit
to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Where you don't get paid.